Okay, shalom everyone. Today is Wednesday, July 14th, and we are here at United Orthodox Synagogues. Second week where we are having a dual method for having the class. We are both live and we are broadcasting on Zoom. So welcome to everyone who is on Zoom, and welcome to everyone who's here live. It's great to see folks. And today we have a great topic with some really interesting material. We start this Shabbat, Sefer Devarim, the book of Devarim, the fifth of the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, right? The fifth of the five books of the Torah. And early on in the Parsha, we are introduced to some rules regarding judges and how judges are supposed to carry themselves. And let's read the Pasuk. If you have the sheet in front of you, it's source number one. You should see on the screen as well. The Torah says, Lo takiru panim bamishpat, kakaton kagadol tishma'un. You shall not be partial in judgment. Hear out the low and high alike, meaning important, unimportant, rich, poor. Everyone gets the same hearing. Lo taguru mipnei ish. Fear no man. Right? This is a warning to the judge not to be intimidated by litigants for any reason. And that's what we're going to focus on today. We're going to focus on this mitzvah of lo taguru mipnei ish. It is mitzvah, if I remember correctly, I'll double check. It is mitzvah number 415 of the 613, that we are not allowed to allow ourselves to be intimidated. Ki ha-mishpat l'elokim hu, fear no man. Fear no man, for judgment is God's. So that's we're going to focus on that first before we get into the details of the mitzvah. We have to. It's not so common that the Torah gives an explanation or a reason for the mitzvah, but here we have that, right? Here we have an explanation, or if you will, a reason for the mitzvah that we are not allowed to fear anyone, and then potentially. Alter judgment, ki hamishpat lelokim hu, because judgment is God's. So, what does one have to do with the other? Right? The Torah says, have no fear, judge the way you're supposed to be judged. Could have left it at that. We would have understood why that's important. But it gives us a reason, ki hamishpat lelokim hu, because judgment is God's. Why? What does one have to do with the other? Why is that the reason given? Yeah, Marilyn.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Is this just talking to judges, or is this talking to everybody if they not to do something because you're afraid of the consequences?
Right. So in context, it's talking about judges, but I think writers and thinkers have extended it to other situations as well. We're going to focus today on specifically judges, whether they're an appointed judge or sort of ad hoc judge, but I could see it certainly applying in other situations where you think something is right and you feel you have to make a certain decision, and you know if you do, there's going to be consequences, but you do anyway. Yeah. Okay, so what's the connection? Let's go back to this question. What's the connection between lo tagur neish, do not fear any man, any person, for judgment is God's? What does for judgment is God's add to the understanding of this prohibition? Anyone online want to take a stab at that question? My question is about this phrase, for judgment is God's. What does that add to our understanding?
What it means to me is that you have to be independent. You have to have an open mind and not be fearful of opposing parties putting pressure on you
right
to make a decision.
Correct. That is correct. That's exactly what it means. And let's understand why God is brought into this, right? Because we understand that just for the sake of a society that operates, we can't have a situation where judges are intimidated because of fear. So what does this add? So the Ramban says something beautiful here. This is source number two. Ki ha-mishpat l'elokim hu, for judgment is God's. Kitam, ki lo la'adam tishpatu, ki la'Hashem. The meaning thereof is expressed in the verse from Divrei Hayamim. For you judge not for man, but for God. I mean, when we judge cases, we're not doing it for us, we're really doing it for God. What does that mean? V'imachem b'divar mishpat. And he is with you in giving judgment. And the Ramban explains what this means. Lomar, ki le'elokim la'asot mishpat ben yotra. It is for God to execute justice between his creatures. Ki alkein baram, for he created them. Lihiyot b'nehem yosher v'tzedek, that there be amongst them fairness and justice. Ulhatzil gazul miyadoshko, and to deliver the person who is robbed from the oppressor. V'natan it etchem bimkomo. So who is the real judge? God. But God allowed us, he appointed us in his stead. He appointed us in his place. A judge, this is really interesting, a judge then is almost a shaliach, right? Is a messenger, an emissary of God. God is the judge, and he sort of appointed us as his understudies, and we do it, right? V'natan etchem bimkomo. So therefore, if one is afraid and acts corruptly, right, they alter their judgment because they're afraid. Their sin is to God. Because you have betrayed his mission. Right? God put the judges here or appointed the judges, and it's God's realm, because God is the ultimate judge. And any type of alteration of judgment for an illegitimate reason is then a sin against God. So now we understand why the Pasuk says, Lo tagur b'ne'ish, back on source number one. Do not fear any man. Do not change the judgment because of any person's intimidation. Ki ha-mishpat l'elokim, because judgment really belongs to God and you're only his emissary. So you basically have to do what he expects you to do. And what he expects you to do is follow the rules of judgment. And not alter them because you're afraid. Of course, the question is, how far does this go? Right? If I, a judge, think that a litigant is going to kill me, right? If I rule against them, am I obligated to rule against them and risk my life? Right? We have a general principle that all the laws of the Torah are set aside for saving my life, anyone's life. This should be one of them. Is this an exception? Is it not an exception? I remember when I was a rabbi in Manhattan, in Kilat Jeshurun, there was a federal judge there who was one of the federal judges that tried the bombers of the, I think the first time that the people bombed the World Trade Center. The first time there was a, I'm not sure if it was the first time, I don't think it was the 9/11 bombers. And he came to shul in an armored car with bodyguards. Because once you try a case like that, I guess the federal government had reason to believe he needed protection. So how far does it go? Right. So we're gonna see that. That's what we're gonna spend some time on.
And judges have been killed.
And right, judges have been killed. So first is a little snippet from Rav Tzion Arusi. Oh, I forgot to put his name in here. Let me add his name here. That's in source number 4, but his bio is in source number 3. Very interesting person. He's the rabbi of Kiryat Ono. He's a member of the Israeli's Chief Rabbinate Council, so he's one of the leading halachic authorities in Israel. And he also has a PhD in law from Tel Aviv University, which is not so common for a dayan. And so you see here. Okay, so he has a book which has a halachic essay connected to the various mitzvot of the Parsha. And he deals with this same question that we just started with, which is, why does the Torah tell us that ki ha-mishpat l'elokim, that we are supposed to not be intimidated because judgment is God? So he explains in source number 4. V'atam ki ha-mishpat l'elokim hu kitam. Ki lo ladam tishpatu ki l'Hashem. God is the judge. Not really. We're not really the judge. Like we said, we're the emissary. Yimachem b'devar mishpat lomar ki lelokim lasot mishpat ben yotrav. He's quoting the Ramban here. Let's go to the second paragraph. Kolomar yud ha'adam yosher v'tzedek. The purpose of living, or the goal of living, is to have justice and uprightness. L'shem kach Hashem baro. That's why God created us. Ein ha'yosher v'hatzedek rak tzorech l'adam ela erech hu l'adam. So this is interesting. There are two ways to look at justice. We could look at justice as something practical. Right? If people go around hitting each other over the head all day, that's just an impractical way to run a society. It's gonna become chaos. And in chaos, you can't have a productive society. That's very practical. But says Rabbi Arusi, justice is not just a practical value, it's a value in and of itself. Having nothing to do with practicality, it's a value in and of itself that the Torah demands that we be just and upright. And that's our purpose. Since justice, as we saw, judgment, as we saw, according to the Ramban, is God's. He says it explicitly. Judges are God's emissaries, God's shlichim. So whatever type of judgment someone does is really a reflection back on God. And if therefore the judges are afraid, and because of that, they offer corrupt judgments, it's not only that they gave a corrupt judgment, but they've sinned to God. They've made God look bad. They've rebelled against their shlichut. The purpose of judgment is to seek out truth. Okay, so that's we're going to stop there. So just sort of a clarification of what I explained the Ramban means, that the judgment really belongs to God. God is the judge. We're just here as his emissaries. And if we judge in a way which is corrupt, we make God look bad. Okay, that's so far the explanation as to what God has to do with what happens here in an earthly court. Now let's go to the Sefer Achinuch, which is where we normally start, and see how the Sefer Achinuch defines the mitzvah. Because now we're going to spend the rest of our time discussing how far this goes. Like I said, does one have to risk their life for this? Okay, here we go. Sefer Achinuch, source number 5. Shelo yirah din hadayan bidin. The judge should not be afraid. The judge is prevented from being afraid of a man to judge honestly. Even if the man is destructive, brazen-faced and thick-headed, rather, the judge has to make the verdict. Velo yasim libo klal lema sheyikra alav mehazek bishvil dino. Listen to this. He has to not pay any attention at all to the possible damage that may come to him as a result of an honest ruling. Yalzen emar lo tagum neish. And then he quotes our pasuk. And then he quotes a midrash. This is amazing. Lashon sifri. Shema Tomar, Yarei Ani Meish Ploni. I'm afraid of this person. Shema Yahargeni O Yaharog Echad Mibne Beiti. Maybe they're going to kill me or kill a member of my household. O Shema Yadlik Et Gedishi O Shema Yiktsatz Et Nitiati. Or maybe they are going to burn my stacks or uproot my plantings. That's there'll be a financial, I'll suffer financially. Talmud Lomar, lo tagur ne'ish. Do not be afraid of any man. So according to Sefer Achinuch, actually according to this Midrash, and then followed by the Sefer Achinuch, this is an exception to the rule that all halachot could be broken, save 3, in order to save my life. We're adding a 4th. I'm not allowed to break this rule, even according to the Sefer Achinuch, if I'm afraid the person's going to kill me. That's in some way surprising, right? Because again, it goes against our normal understanding of how halacha works. Anyone want to suggest a reason why this may be another exception to that rule? Let me just restate the question for those who are just coming on. We have a general understanding that for all laws of the Torah, we are allowed to break them if keeping them is going to cause our death. Like Shabbat, for example, Kashrut. Then we have here the Sefer Achinuch telling us, even if you think a litigant is going to kill you, you still have to give the honest judgment. That seems to be a fourth exception, right? That halacha cannot be broken for this, in order to keep this this halacha. So why would this be an exception? Anyone live or on Zoom want to suggest an answer? Just unmute yourself if you'd like to and fire away. Go ahead, Zach. Jeff, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say maybe it's necessary because otherwise it would be too easy to intimidate judges and you would have no judges.
That's very interesting. You're suggesting that the whole legal system would fall apart. And so it's not an exception to the rule so much as we're saying, if we don't uphold it at a very high level, the whole halacha is going to disappear. So maybe Correct. In that case, we have to have a higher standard. Okay. Excellent. Good.
What about the issue that it's a threat of someone killing you that you don't really know what's going to happen? It's not like,
okay,
I'm sick and I won't call the ambulance on Shabbat when I know that there's an immediate threat.
Great. So Carol is threading the needle. And the truth is I may not have, I may have semi-purposely misread the Sefer Achinuch just to strengthen the question. Meaning, maybe the Sefer Achinuch is saying, and he does, he says, Shema Tomar, Yarei Ani Me'ish Ploni, Shema Yahargein. Maybe the person's going to kill me. Maybe he's going to take vengeance. So when it's a maybe, okay, then you have to do your job. But when it's for sure, when you are certain that the person is going to take vengeance, then it would be like every other halacha, which you are allowed to break. Okay, so that's Carol's suggestion, which is an excellent and close read of the Sefer Achinuch. Great. Okay, so that's two suggestions. And Zach?
I would like to bring the concept which being spelled out in 1956 by Martin Buber, when he gave assessment of Nazi Germany, which is actually reflects so-called totalitarian system. And he divided people in three categories, Germans. One category is righteous people, another one, sin people, and third one, evil people. In a righteous people, he called small numbers of Germans who took their life not to be part of this system.
Right.
This is what I believe the message what we have over here. You know that you will be killed. It's a small percent of righteous judges who would take this step and commit suicide, which is from Jewish point of view, you have only three reasons why you can take your life. This is not one of them that Torah spell out. And I believe this is a great message to carry.
Yeah, but that's really interesting, Zach. And I did not know that about Martin Buber. So thank you. Mm-hmm. But the challenge here is that this is a mitzvah to everybody. So you have to understand what it means. What does it mean? You're right that even if it does mean that a judge must be willing to give up their life, it's probably the case, I would agree, that not everyone will. But the question is that what's really being asked? Meaning, are judges really being asked to give up their life for a situation where they may be they take their life in their hands if they give a judgment? Or is it more like Carol saying they're only expected to take a risk, but they're not expected to be in a situation where it's certain that they are going to be killed? So it's the question is what does the pasuk mean, right? We read the Torah. What does that mean? I'm a judge. What am I obligated to do? And in a few minutes at the end, we're going to see a real case of Rav Avadi Yosef where he had to make a decision like this.
Yeah. And by the way, I would like to just make one comment. In totalitarian or authoritarian states, journalists, they got on the same level. They know if they publish truth, they would be killed. And go 15 years ago in the present Russia, it's happened multiple times.
Right. We see it cases today that
happened with the judges.
Right, we see it today that opposition leaders are killed, jailed, even today. We don't have to go back to Nazi Germany. Right. There's I forget his name, the guy in jail in Russia.
Yeah.
Opposition leader. They tried to kill him already once. Exactly. Okay, Jeff, go ahead.
It just seems that there's also a possible continuum of fear. There could just be imaginary fear. There could be a threat involved all the way.
Right.
Or there could be imaginary fear. It could be that one of the litigants has a propensity to do harm. And then you have a final example where there's actually a threat that's being made.
Right.
So anyway, I just think that that's something that
We're going to see that as a factor.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Great. Okay. So what's the reason for the mitzvah? The Sefer Achinuch here is very terse in source number 6. Shorosh mitzvah zu ha-seichel me'id alav. This is obvious. Right. Intellect testifies. Well, and it's obvious we need this. If we don't have this, it's going to be chaos. Okay. So now the question is again, to what extent? So we've already seen, according to the Sifri, right over here on the left where the little finger is, and there's a yellow arrow. I'm not going to read it because we did it again. According to that opinion, one has to be willing to give up their life. Even if it's just a maybe, Shema Yahareg et Banai, or Shema Yadlik et Gidishai. The way this is understood is, I'm sorry, a person has to be willing to give up their life. Rashi, who comments on the Talmudic passage that teaches the rule of a judge not being in fear, says something else. Here's what we're trying to define on source number 7. In source number 7, we're trying to define on the sources online, it's underlined and in yellow. For those of you who are here, it's just underlined and bold. Source number 7. Shema nitchayev nimtza chazak rotfo. Perhaps the strong and contentious one will be found liable, and it will turn out that the strong one will pursue the judge with intent to harm him. So that it's unclear what that means, harm him. Like Jeff said, is there a threat? Is it an imagined fear? Is it physical violence? Is it death? So how do we understand this? Rashi understands this as follows. Hachi Garcina, source number 9. Shema Yitchalev Chazak Mitzorotfo, Rodef et Hadayan, Lahafech et Hadin. What's this person trying to do? They're pursuing the judge to get the judge to change the verdict. There's no indication here of a death threat. There's no indication here that the person is going to do violence, right? If you look at the Rashi in source number 8, Bal Miriva Matriach Dayanim, this person bothers judges. So according to Rashi, when the Torah says, don't be afraid of anyone, who's the anyone it's talking about? A thug, a bully, not a murderer. It could, right? Not, We haven't discussed the murderer yet. This is just someone who's matriach dayanim. This is someone who sends nasty letters to the judge, who posts nasty things about the judge on Facebook, who goes on television and says the judge is a crook, right? It's someone who bothers the judge, but doesn't threaten the judge. Certainly doesn't threaten to kill the judge. That is, against that person, we're not allowed to fear. I'm not allowed to change my judgment because someone posts something nasty about me on Facebook. Right? What about a murderer? What would Rashi say about a murderous litigant? Maybe Rashi would say that for a murderous litigant, I am allowed to change my judgment. Or I am allowed to recuse myself from the case. Because like every other rule in halacha, I'm allowed to break it to save my life. So I could express my fear by not judging the case. So that's okay because I'm allowed to do it to save my life. What I'm not allowed to do is leave the case because I am afraid that the guy is going to bug me, he's going to prank call me, or he's going to picket my house or something like that. On the other hand, we see in source number 10, which is the source we saw quoted by the Sefer Achinuch. No, who am I not allowed to be afraid of? The murderer. I'm not allowed to be afraid of the murderer. So what we have here is a classic machloket of how to understand the Gemara and how to understand the pasuk. Really, the pasuk says, "Don't be afraid of anyone." The Gemara says what that means is, "Don't be afraid of someone who's going to try to pursue the judge to harm the judge." Then we have a debate. What does harm mean? Does harm mean he's going to bother me? He's going to cause me a lot of problems. Maybe he's going to inflict damage on my livelihood. That's the person I'm not allowed to fear. But the murderer, I am allowed to fear. Or I'm not even allowed to fear the murderer. That's the machloket. We saw already how the Sefer Achinuch rules. The Sefer Achinuch rules that I'm not even allowed to be afraid of the murderous judge. Of the murderous litigant. That's what we saw in source number 5. Jeff, you want to say something?
No, I'm sorry.
Okay. So, does anyone agree with Rashi? Rashi saw the Sefer Achinuch agrees with the Midrash that you're not even allowed to be afraid of someone who may do you physical harm. So, source number 12, I forgot to label it. I believe it's the Taz, who says as follows. It's very small. I'm sorry. I could blow it up on the screen here a little bit. Herachti bazeh kinirali perush Rashi ikar. Taz says, I've spent a lot of time discussing this because I believe that Rashi is right. Vehecha deika sakana, when there is danger, like life danger, yachole histalek, one is allowed to leave and not judge the case. Just a little background. The halachic sources talk about at what point is a judge allowed to leave the case because they're afraid. So everyone says, well, if before the case started, and since the case hasn't started, you don't have a sense of what direction it's going to go in, then you're allowed to leave. You say, I don't want to judge this case. That guy's dangerous. I'm out. But once you've already started and you know, you have a sense of which way the case is going to go, then you think, oh, I think the guy's guilty and I'm going to be afraid of him, then you're not allowed to leave the case. Says the Taz, that does not apply if you think the person's really going to hurt you or kill you. Echa de'ika sakana, back in verse 12, yachol histalek, one is allowed to leave the case. Even after you know what direction the case is going in. Vizariz ve'eno ne'nash, dilav delo taguru, eno ela shelo lachnis devarecha mipnei bal meriva. V'bechashas sakanat nefashot, v'hezek mamon lo irakra. This pasuk is not talking about a situation where your life is at stake. It's talking about a situation where it's going to be some other type of bothersome outcome, like Rashi. So we see that the Taz agrees like, with Rashi, that you are allowed to not judge a case. You are allowed to express fear if your life is at stake. And the Sifri says, no, even in that case, you have to judge the case all the way through. Okay, so let's look at a real case about this. and see how Rav Avadia Yosef ruled. This is source number 19. Source number 19. Just again, we have a machloket, how to understand the type of threat that the judge is under that would require one to stick with it. Is it only a low-level type of threat, but a high-level type of threat, a person is allowed to quit, or even a high-level threat, a person is not allowed to quit, a person is allowed to be a friend. So if you're looking, it's on the screen. If you're here live, we are starting on source 19, which is the bottom source on page 5. Okay. This comes from the collection of Rav Avadia Yosef's Tshuvot. It's a fascinating case. It's wild. I believe this is when he was still in Egypt, chief rabbi of Egypt. And he writes the following. I'll read and translate. Bu'uvda da'ata li'adi b'ishachat she'ashochet ofot l'tzibur yoti b'beit v'midrash b'yom tov acharon shal pesach hugadli shu umad v'shochet achar chatzot hayom u'mekabel kesef k'maseh b'chol. Rav Yosef says, one happy day on the last day of Pesach in Egypt, I was in shul, in the Beit Midrash, and it was after midday. I'll explain why that's important. And there was a shochet who was shechting on Yom Tov and collecting money. So it's okay to shecht on Yom Tov, right? You're allowed to shecht on Yom Tov in order to prepare food because it's not like Shabbos. But they had a rule that after midday you can't, because you're only allowed to shecht on Yom Tov if you're eating it for yourself for that day. The assumption is if you're shechting after Yom Tov, your main meal is over, it's for the next day. So they said no shechting on Yom Tov. And on top of that, no shechting after midday. And not only was this guy shechting after midday, he was collecting money for it. Even if you're shechting in the morning of Yom Tov, you can't take money for it. You have to have some sort of arrangement. You can't take money. So what did Rav Avadia Yosef do when he heard this? V'shalachti shnei edim k'sheirim l'roto. I sent two witnesses to find out, is this true? Uba v'sapru li ki heina emet nachon adavar. Yep, Rav Avadia Yosef. The guy is shechting. Store is open. He's collecting money. V'zmanti oto l'beitin. So I called the shochet to the beitin. Ubiyom aleph kaftei nisan gives the exact date. Kibalnu edut me'ed echad v'fanav. I had a beitin of three people, and I had the witness. The witness says, yes, I saw this person shechting and collecting money in front of everyone. He was giving change. And the shochet sweared in God's name that it's a lie. So that's the case. So in order to deal with this, they decided to suspend the shochet. They didn't remove him entirely. They suspended him. And they suspended him until after Shavuos. Right, so not terribly long. We know 49 days between Pesach and Shavuos. They suspended him for 49 days.
When he did it.
It was on Pesach. We know it was on Pesach.
He did it on Pesach.
We know that's the problem. He was shechting and collecting money on Yom Tov.
Oh, okay.
Right? So they suspend him till after Shavuos. Of course. What happens? And he says, all this we wrote down. What happens on Shavuos night? The custom, I wasn't aware of this custom. The Egyptian custom was to shecht ducks and do like a kaparot, like we do with chickens on Erev Yom Kippur. They would do it with ducks on Erev Shavuos, on Shavuos itself, on the night of Shavuos. Again, it's Yom Tov, you're allowed to shecht. So Rav Avadia says that I went there to encourage the shochtim to make sure that their knives were sharp and that everything was okay. And sure enough, who's there? This guy. And his blood, his apron is full of blood. He's not just watching. He's obviously shechting because his apron is full of blood. Matzativ omed v'dam v'katnuto. I find him standing there with his blood, his apron full of blood. And I ask him, did he shecht? And he says, no, an inch down. So this guy's interesting, right? His apron is full of blood. He's almost caught red-handed, like literally with blood on his hands. Nope, I didn't do it. Bakashtiv she'agili amet. I said, tell me the truth. He said, he finally broke down. He said, I shech. So now he says, Rav Avadya says, that's it. You're done. You're fired. You can never shecht again anymore in this community. Right? Amarti lo hinanim mitare b'cha leval tosif l'shchot od uvo alai acher chag l'rabanut l'ot ech yipol davar b'nyanech. I want you to come after Yom Tov to see what's going to happen. Now listen to this. This is what gets to our case. V'hine kishashavti libeiti v'yisov al delte beiti hu v'kama goyim mimochrei ha'ofot v'tsa'akot gedolot. I got home and the guy with a bunch of non-Jews who are the chicken sellers, maybe, and he's their supplier, it sounds like, they're yelling and screaming at me. V'yikshu l'shpor hadelt. They tried to break down my door. I mean, just imagine this scene. Uvenes nitzolti mehem. And I was only saved by a miracle. Ve'ili shcheino, and his neighbor told me, ki ha'shochid on this car, sachar goy b'kesef lirtzacheni. He told me, this guy's neighbor said that he put a hit on you. He hired a Gentile to kill you. An old-time mafia-style hit. Okay? This is a crazy story. V'shilem lo b'mitba v'nishpali al davar hazeh. The neighbor swore to me that this is true, that the shochet paid off these hitmen to kill Rav Avadya Yosef. And then he wants to know, what am I supposed to do? Can I try this case? This is our question. This, Jeff brought up before, there's a hierarchy of threats. I think you would agree here, Jeff, that we've reached DEFCON 5, right? We've reached the highest level of threat. We have a known, confirmed threat against his life. Right, Jeff?
Correct, yes.
Okay, great. Now, it is possible, by the way, I did think about this. It is possible that the neighbor has some beef against the shochet, and the neighbor is lying, that he didn't take a hit on Rav Avadya Yosef. But at least in the context of this responsa, Rav Avadya Yosef is taking this very seriously. So then he quotes, Rav Avadya Yosef quotes the Shulchan Aruch, who says, and now we're going to see the two sides. The Shulchan Aruch, we'll do this outside, it'll save us time. Rav Avadya Yosef quotes the Shulchan Aruch, who says, if your life is at stake, doesn't matter. You have to judge the case. But then he quotes the Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserles, the Ashkenazi gloss. And it's interesting that Rav Avadya Yosef here, who is a Sfardi, and a very proud Sfardi, and who believes that in Eretz Yisrael, everyone, Ashkenazi or Sfardi, should follow the rules of Rav Yosef Karo, the Sfardi author of the Shulchan Aruch, even if you're Ashkenazi. In this case, he quotes the Rama, Rav Moshe Isserles from Poland, and says he takes a lenient view. And he says that if your life is at stake, you do not have to judge the case, even if you know already to which direction it's leading. Meaning no matter at what stage, once you feel your life is at stake, you're allowed to recuse yourself. And so he says at the bottom here, we're at the bottom, if you want to follow along, I'll highlight it in the online version. If you follow it, we're on page 6, if you're here live, the last couple of lines on page 6. The last couple of lines of the middle source on page 6. He says, Mikol Makom, despite what the Shulchan Aruch says, nonetheless, the Rama writes, The Rama writes, She'im yesh chashas sakana ledayan, if the judge is really in danger, Rashai listalek min hadin, he's allowed to recuse himself. Hachanami sheish chashash sakana b'davar. So in this case too, my case, when this guy took a hit on me, and there is a potential danger, rashai ani lehistalek midin esek bish. I'm also allowed to recuse myself from this bad business. Interesting, again, that he took the role of Ravad of the Rama, okay. And then he quotes other people. We're in that the next paragraph. Kain ra'iti b'shelo tuchuvot mahar shadam, quotes others. Shekatav shevshar shelo amrat Torah lo tuvim ne'ish el hecha de lo bari hazeka aval hecha de bari hazeka lo. Like Carol said, and like Jeff said, when the Torah says not to be afraid, it's only when you're sure there's going to be danger. When you're not sure there's going to be danger, but when you are sure there's going to be danger, you don't have to risk your life. Ukamosha Amru, he quotes the Gemara in Psachim, that even though we have a belief that if you're God's messenger, and we've already established that a judge is God's messenger, that you won't be hurt, that only applies if there's no clear danger. But if there's clear danger, even though you're God's messenger, you might be hurt, which is in this case. And he quotes some others along the same lines. And then he also adds Mikom Makom Binidon Dinan. Even if you want to take the strict ruling of the Shulchan Aruch, in our case, Shashochit Hazeh Asam Maseh Bivo'o Im Goyim Rishaim, that this person actually did something. He came to my house with these thugs. That Golel Aleinu Layem Aleinu to beat us up. Gam Harav Yodah Shem Utar Lidos Talek Mihadiyun Bazeh. Even the strict view would agree that in such a case, you're allowed to remove yourself from. So it sounds a lot like Rav Yosef is going to recuse. However, after he goes through this whole thing, he says, Mikom Makom, Achare Shuvi Nichamti. I looked at this situation and I reversed myself. Now listen to why. Kim lo yeni don't care. Oh, if I don't judge this properly, Yamshich Hashochit Lachshila Tarabim B'Shchita Sheinu Ruyakadat. He's going to continue to trick the public by telling them that he's providing them with shechita, which was done according to halacha, when it wasn't. Birotosha Italia Dalyona, when he sees that all I do is bully the judges, and they're going to drop the case. Not only is this guy not afraid of God, but he won't have any fear of any human judge because he's going to be able to intimidate them all. And then he's going to return to his bad ways. So at great risk to himself, sounds like, Rav Avadia Yosef decided to actually judge the case. So that's just an interesting historical tidbit of this, of what happened. And we see Rav Avadia Yosef really, this is a real question, right? We already pointed out that judges today are assassinated, that journalists are harassed and assassinated. And now we have a real life case in the life of Rav Avadia Yosef, who lived in our lifetime, where a judge was really threatened and had to put in play how to understand the Gemara. Do you understand it in the strict fashion, like the Sefer HaChinuch, that even if your life is at stake, you have to judge the case? Or like Rashi, you only have to judge the case if the guy's going to bug you. But if he's going to kill you, you don't have to judge the case. Okay. And that's the end. Towards the end of the Tshuva, Rav Avadia Yosef just goes on to say how much trouble Shochtim give him. And they're never honest, and I'm always risking and taking risks in order to provide the community with kosher shechita. Yeah, let's just read it. It's interesting at the end. We'll just read that, then we'll end. The last source in the book. Second to last source in the book. Kama savalti mimenu b'shvil she'avartiv. He never checked his knife, and Rav Avadia Yosef always found his knife with imperfections. And I kicked him off. I fired him. And so someone tried to get to hurt him. The Kamokane Oh, you know what? I think I ended up copying the wrong thing. No, we're not going to do that. That doesn't apply to us. Okay. Finally, one other case. I couldn't find this in the original. I looked. I couldn't find it. A Sefer Aznayim Lemishpat of Zalman Sarutskin lived in the previous, I think probably died in maybe the 80s or the 70s. He asks a question. We've been talking about quitting a case. Is a judge allowed to alter the outcome because of fear? Meaning, I'm not going to quit the case. I'm going to stay on, but I know that the thug is guilty. But I'm going to declare him innocent, because if I don't, he's going to kill me. Right? That's a whole nother level. It's one thing to say, I'm not going to judge the case. But now you've judged the case, and now you're actually going to give a false judgment, which is a separate prohibition in the Torah. So he says here, Va'ayin maznayim l'mishpat shechidesh kan shelahatota mishpat machbat pachad asur, to alter the case because of fear. You're not allowed to. Afilu kishayesh chashas sakarat nefashot. Even if there's mamash, even if there's a real fear that you're going to be killed. Mishum sharehu kimahafech din Torah. That is like uprooting the Torah. Right? Because the Torah gives, these are the ways to judge. You use the rules of the Torah to judge. And then you change it. So you're uprooting the law of the Torah. So maybe for that, to actually uproot the Torah itself, that's also something you have to die for. However, he says, Ulam lo barur sham im hamedubar gam kishesh sakana vadi. However, he's not sure if that applies to a situation where you're sure he's going to hurt you or kill you. Again, if you think he will, then you're not allowed to change the judgment. But if you're sure he will, then it should be like any other situation. You're allowed to save your life in order to break the law. Okay, so there we see it. We have a pasuk starting at the beginning that a judge is not allowed to fear anyone, and the machloket. And what does this do with God? Because God is the real judge, and a judge is really only God's emissary. And so therefore, giving improper judgment or running away from judgment when it's sinning against God and not doing your job, and also a chil Hashem. And then we saw the machloket, whether the obligation to be steadfast applies in a situation where you're going to be killed, or only applies in the situation where you're just going to be harassed. And that is the debate. And we saw that the Sefer HaChinuch takes a strict position. The Shulchan Aruch takes a strict position, but the Ramah takes a more lenient position. And we saw Rav Avadya Yosef ruled for himself that he was permitted to recuse himself, but in the end decided not to, for the sake of justice. Okay. That's it for today. I'm sorry for those of you who just recently came on. Maybe you didn't get the notice that we were starting early today. We started at 11:15. I'm so sorry about that. But I will send the recording out, and you'll be able to listen to the shiur that way. A question?
Yes. What happens? There are two judges hearing the same case. There's two attorneys also going to argue the case of two to two judges.
Right.
The first attorney arguing the case has one particular thing he's emphasizing.
Okay.
To win his case. Now, he goes to a different court, and he wins that case. He goes to a different court who is slightly different and argues the other side of the case.
Well, why would the same case be being tried in two different courts?
It has happened before. Mm-hmm. I can't think of the particular case, but it happened before.
That's a good question. I'm not sure if that doesn't seem to be directly related to this, and I'm not sure. Halacha doesn't really have a clear situation of like a lawyer. You can't have people in the court helping you. but doesn't really have a situation of a lawyer, meaning you have a case, you come make your case before the judge, the guy you're against makes their case against the judge, and the judges make their decision.
But I'm talking about two different judges coming to opposite opinions.
Yeah, that happens all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why we have a Supreme Court.
That happens all the time, right? And then you go according to the majority.
That's right. But then the minority in the United States Supreme Court also gets to make a statement
yeah.
of why they do.
Right.
And that is all, and that has in time, maybe 10 years, 20 years later, they go back and look at the case because of the
great. That's a great way to end. Ron is saying something very important. The Gemara asks, why does the Talmud record the losers, the losing opinions? And the answer is because maybe one day that opinion in an emergency situation, a unique situation, is applicable and will be used. So we need to have it on the books as a position that was held, even though it didn't win.
Right.
It doesn't mean it's wrong. It didn't win because it wasn't the majority opinion. Exactly. Excellent point. Great way to end. Thank you, Ron.
Okay.
Okay, my dear friends, have a wonderful day. Shabbat shalom. If you want to join tomorrow night, 8:30 for Ramban al HaTorah, Ramban's commentary on the Torah, for a half hour to get ready for Shabbos. We'll see you then. Shalom, shalom.